past speakers. Our next is Sally Diamond to discuss her work on modeling the effects of road density on stream discharge.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for being here. We're going to take a little different approach and move away from soils a little bit and get to hydrology. I'm going to be presenting some of the work that I've been doing for my master's thesis. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors and my sponsors who are here on the slide. So I'd like to start by explaining why forest roads are important. And it really starts with the issue of land use change. And in the Blue Ridge Mountains, in the past 30 years, we've had about 800 square kilometers of forest and ag land converted to urban use. So as our natural lands are converted to urban use, we become increasingly aware of our impacts on the natural environment. In forestry, we're not so much concerned with vegetation removal, because if we are harvesting correctly, the vegetation will grow back and our impacts on the environment are actually minimal. But we're really concerned with the effects that we have when we create these dense and permanent road networks. And besides just altering the surrounding ecosystem, road networks can really affect riparian environments. And in terms of hydrology, they can really affect the quantity of water in the stream, the quality of that water, and the timing of peak flows in response to extreme events. And so as a result of all of these effects, there's kind of a negative public perception of extractive resource industries, such as forestry and mining. This really comes about when we have flood events, and downstream communities are really affected by the flood, and sometimes blame is laid on the industry and results in litigation and costs a lot of money and is a big mess, which really leads us to some broad questions. And the really general one is, do land use changes contribute to flooding? And if we pare that down to a forestry aspect, we want to know specifically, do forest roads contribute to flooding? And so to answer this question, we're going to use the use of the distributed hydrology soil vegetation model, which I will use DHSVM and save some time. We're going to use that model to help us answer this question, and I'll discuss the model a little bit later in the presentation. So our study site is the Coweta Long-Term Ecological Research Station, which is in western North Carolina. We're using sort of the northern portion of the Coweta Basin due to some instrumentation restraints that we had. And so that's the Shope Fork subbasin, which you can see on the picture down there. So our study watershed is 760 hectares with close to 34 kilometers of roads in it. Soils are inceptisols and ultisols. Cove hardwoods dominate the cover type, and precipitation is really high for the region, and it's variable between the lower slopes and the higher elevations, but we have a mean annual precipitation of close to 200 centimeters. Getting into a little bit about the model, it was developed at the University of Washington in the 1990s, and it's primarily been used in the Pacific Northwest and in British Columbia. And it's had a lot of different uses. But it's a physically based distributed model, and it models at the scale of a grid cell. And we're using a 30-meter grid cell. And it will simultaneously solve the energy and water balance for each grid cell for the entire watershed. So if you think about it conceptually, there's really a lot going on every time you run the model. And it's also unique in that it will incorporate road networks into those equations. So that's why we chose this model for the project. So in order to compute all those equations, it requires extensive inputs, which I could probably present all day on the inputs. So I just listed some of the general categories there on the slides. And for the computer buffs, it's written in C. We have pre-processing in ARC macro language, and it runs in a Linux environment. And it will model a number of different outputs, and I just listed a few: stream discharge, evapotranspiration, soil moisture, and snowpack. So getting into some of the methodology of the project, the first step was to collect all of the inputs for the model. And where available, we used data from CAWEDA, and we used a lot of Sirgo data for the soils inputs. And many, many of the values came from literature searches, and field collection was kept minimal for this project, although we used some field collection for the stream and road inputs. So next step is to run the model, and we used an hourly time step, and we used a warm-up period of 9 months, which sort of established a base for the model, and then a 1-year calibration period and a 3-year validation period. So once we had the output from the model, we compared it with the observed data from Shope Fork, and to check the efficiency of the model, the accuracy of it, we looked at 3 components: the timing of the hydrograph, the volume between the 2 hydrographs, and then a combination of the timing and the volume, which we're calling model efficiency. So getting into the second objective and the road density experiment, we have the control density of the watershed and then 5 different treatment densities, and we have 3 quote replications. And if you think about the modeling environment, you can't actually have replications because you would have duplicate results from the model. So for our replications, we're actually having different road layouts. And this really becomes evident when you look at our 6th treatment, which is actually a density of 0, which you can't replicate because you would have duplicate results. So we only have 1 replication for that density. The layouts were designed in GIS, and they were designed to be random but also to be plausible with regards to watershed access and so forth. And we did our best to attempt for outside factors such as road slope and topographic position and anything else we could think of that would have an impact on stream discharge. So then we run the model for the validation period and then analyze the output compared to the control using statistical analysis software. So now we have results. The observed, I hope you can see that. The observed CAWEDA historical data are in the orange, and then the predicted DHSVM data are in the green. And above the hydrograph, we have a hydrograph showing the precipitation as it corresponds to the hydrograph below. And really the important thing to take away from this graph is that the 2 hydrographs are really exhibiting the same general pattern, and that the model appears to be predicting the same peak flows that we see in the observed data. So moving on, this is still the calibration, but it's showing the volume error, the volume difference between the 2 hydrographs. So anything above the x-axis is where the model overpredicted flow, and anything below the x-axis is where it underpredicted flow. So it's important to note here, if you see in the middle of the graph, which I have the mouse, I guess. So right here, we actually have a very good prediction by the model, and that's sort of in the lower precipitation and in the base flow areas, it's actually doing a very good job. Okay, and then we see during extreme precipitation events, it's not doing such a great job with over and under predicting, and there seems to be no pattern as to when it over and under predicts. So with the validation, we have the 3 years of data, and we note that it still exhibits the same general pattern as the calibration. And then this looks much funkier than the observed data, but I want to note that We have a different scale on the y-axis. We're going from -2 to 1.5 instead of -4 to 3. So it's actually a smaller volume, but we have more peaks. It's not doing as good of a job predicting base flow. And then I want to point out here, let's see right here, is the 2005 hurricane season, which was the most active hurricane season that the Atlantic has ever seen. So it's really providing some crazy results as far as our response. And going kind of fast. So here are the statistical results. And we see that the validation is doing a much better job with the timing than the calibration. And I believe that that's because the calibration had two very, very large storm events towards the end of the time period. And if you look closely at the data, the peaks have a lag effect at the end of the calibration. And then if you look at the volume, even though the calibration had a higher maximum volume error, it was still doing a general job, a better job, of predicting the flow, and so the validation was much more peaky. But the overall result is that both the calibration and validation had very similar model efficiencies. And these are similar values as we would see in the literature, though they're at the lower end. We would like to see the model efficiency values to be at unity. So, and then getting to some conclusions, we can conclude that the model works reasonably well for predicting stream flow at Coweta, though it has problems with both predicting the timing and the stream response to extreme rainfall events. And I do believe we can improve the model efficiency by better calibrating the input parameters, although this becomes a black hole because there are so many input parameters, and so it's hard to know where to begin and when to end when you start doing that. The addition of a meteorological station could help. I only used one station, and I think by adding another station towards the top of the watershed, a higher elevation could be beneficial. And then changes to the model. It's a model, so it can always be improved as our science knowledge improves. And then you'll notice I didn't present any results from my road density experiment, and that's because it's still in progress. So that's what I get to do when I go back to Blacksburg. But we've designed the layouts, and we just need to run them for the model and analyze the output. And there I go. That's the end. Thank you, guys, and I'll take any questions.